Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good morning and welcome to the weekend, Radical Progressives. It's Halloween weekend and I'm Russ Belville, the host of the Russ Belville Show. That makes sense, doesn't it? Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here today, and glad to have all our longtime listeners, longtime fans listening here to the show today. Our phone number here in the studio live is 866-5577-377, and we've got plenty to talk about. But before we get to all of the stories, I just want to give some personal notes about the show and what's happening here in Radical Russland. You may have been listening last week when I had mentioned that there was two shows left of the Russ Belville Show, and then that would mean that today would be one show left. Well, the rumors of my demise may be exaggerated. Yeah, some good news. Now, I can't go into great detail at this point, but it looks like I may just be a caterpillar ready to turn into a butterfly. So, again, papers aren't signed and everything's not official, so I can't really say anything officially. What I can say officially is that this will probably be the last Russ Belville Show at this time on this station. But as far as the Russ Belville Show continuing to exist, hey, things are looking good. Things are looking up. So that's good news for me today and in my favorite holiday. If you want to get the official update to find out where I'll be next Saturday, where I'll be on your dial or on the internet or where the satellite or wherever the heck I end up, check out my website at www.radicalrus.net. You can also send me an email if you're curious, at radicalrus@gmail.com. All right, well, let's get to it. Just like you, I work a full-time job for a living, you know, working 40 hours a week, so you probably don't have a lot of time to catch up with the newspaper or the evening news. So, at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
Raging wildfires in California give us the chance to see if George Bush cares about white people.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Condoleezza Rice imposes sanctions on Iran because we can't wait for a smoking gun to be the mushroom cloud. Wait a minute, this script is 5 years old.
So I've told people that if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon.
Senate Democrats are considering giving retroactive immunity for the telephone companies who were spying illegally on Americans.
Or when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Senate Democrats are considering confirming an attorney general nominee who can't define torture.
If waterboarding is torture, torture is not constitutional.
Senate Democrats confirm a homophobic, racist, conservative Southern judge to the Court of Appeals. Hey, it's a capitulation trifecta. Do we win something? House Democrats pass the S-CHIP bill again so George Bush can tell us who he's going to screw with a veto.
Poor kids first.
The State Department knew 2 years ago that Blackwater mercenaries were murdering unarmed civilians in Iraq.
How can you shoot women? Children!
Easy! You just don't need them so much!
And for the first time in history, oil hits $90 a barrel. Remember, when Bush the oil man came into office, oil was $30 a barrel and gas cost $1.47.
Oil, that is. Black gold, Texas tea.
Ah, the black gold, the Texas tea. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there making a lot of money on this war. You know, it's always been about the oil. You knew that, right? Operation Iraqi Liberation, OIL. Yeah, no secret to those of us who are paying attention, those of us who get our news elsewhere than the mainstream media that doesn't cover that in very much depth. But of course, the story that everyone's talking about right now is these horrendous wildfires down in Southern California. And, you know, I was just down there in L.A. just 2 weeks ago. And, you know, it was pretty dry when I was down there in L.A. I remember thinking that. that, you know, coming from Portland and it being rainy and gray all the time, I just like, wow, it's, you know, very dry and everything looks very very brown and dry, and, you know, well, turns out that it certainly was. According to the news that I've been reading, it looks like Los Angeles and that whole Southern California area has been going through an extreme measure of drought. You know, we had 150 days, I read, where Los Angeles went without any measurable rainfall. And we've also got people in the southeastern United States. I'm seeing the news reports of places in Georgia that where the aquifers and the water supplies are running dangerously low. They're having to do all sorts of rationing, and they got people turning in their neighbors if they're watering the lawns. And yet the folks on the right side of the aisle, on the right wing, still want to deny that there's any sort of global warming going on. They still want to deny the facts, deny the majority of the scientists around the world who tell us this is happening. And this is a contributing factor to these fires, you know, and to lots of disasters that we have experienced and have yet to experience. You know, when Katrina happened a couple of years ago, they talked about how the warming temperatures in the ocean are causing more powerful hurricanes more often. And now we're getting these wildfires, these Santa Ana winds that are kicking up to 100 miles an hour and less than 10% humidity in these, you know, months and months and months without rain. And yet the right wing wants to defend, you know, the oil companies, defend these energy companies that and these polluters. They want to, you know, drag their heels on doing something about global warming. And meanwhile, Americans die. And it's not just, you know, it's not just the issue of the global warming, of course. This is, you know, you can't pin that entirely on George Bush. It's been years and years and years in the making. But what I can pin on George Bush here is the severe shortages that the California National Guard has been facing trying to fight these fires, because half their equipment is in Iraq. This was reported in the San Francisco Chronicle. This was last May, okay? So we're, you know, 5 months ago, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that the California National Guard had been depleted and warned that, quote, severe equipment shortages could hinder the Guard's response to a large-scale disaster, end quote, such as a major fire. Because we send the Guard to Iraq, we send their equipment, and that equipment doesn't come back. Governor Schwarzenegger has been complaining about this. Governor Schwarzenegger, 5 months ago, said, a lot of equipment has gone to Iraq, and it doesn't come back when the troops come back. Okay, sorry. Apologize for the bad Schwarzenegger impersonation. But, yeah, so he's complaining about it, too. So we've got all of our efforts and our men and our equipment focused in on this debacle, on this quagmire that is Iraq. And meanwhile, we've got a million people in the Southern California area who've been forced to evacuate their homes. The largest mass migration of human beings since the Civil War. Because they didn't have the equipment they needed to get these fires under control early on. Yeah, did you catch that? Did you see that quote? Yeah, this. Check out my website, RadicalRust.net. I've got a great cartoon up from Keith Tucker and What Now Cartoons. But it gives you the quote from one of these fire chiefs out there who said that basically if they would have had more air support in the first couple days of these fires, they could have gotten these fires under control. If our airplanes weren't out there in Iraq, if the California National Guard's airplanes weren't out there in Iraq, if they didn't have so many of them out there in Iraq, maybe they could have saved a few homes. We're talking about over half a million homes here, half a million acres that have been burned down and thousands of homes that have been burned down. And last report I heard, the loss of 10 lives in these wildfires, and we couldn't get a handle on it early on. Because half of our equipment was in Iraq. You know, Senator Barbara Boxer from California brought this up as well. So this is just the beginning, folks. This is just the beginning of this wildfire disaster. Because, you know, with the disaster capitalists in office, you know, these guys that want to give all the contracts to their cronies, you know Halliburton's going to be in there any moment. You know, Bechtel, these guys are going to be bidding on the reconstruction of California. Let things fall apart. That's the Republican way, right? Just let the chaos happen. Let the chaos happen so a buck can be made on fixing it. And so a buck can be made on building it back up. Let it fall down so that we can make a buck building it back up. Now, we come back from the break here. We're going to continue talking about this, these California wildfires. I've got some interesting news with regards to FEMA and how FEMA has been kind of patting themselves on the back for how well they've done here compared to Katrina a couple years ago. And also, a look at how the White House has been censoring the reports on global warming. You won't believe what they've done this time. 16 after the hour.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
I believe the effort is well coordinated. I know we're getting the manpower and assets on the ground that have been requested by the state and local authorities.
What I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. Everybody is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
Welcome back. 21 after the hour. Radical Russ here. Yeah, it's interesting contrast and compare, isn't it? Looking back a two and a half years ago to the disaster of Katrina and the federal government's reaction to that, you know? Remember when Katrina was happening and, you know, New Orleans is underwater and we see on the CNN, we see thousands and thousands of black faces screaming, help, 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 help. And the next photo shot we get is George Bush accepting a cake from John McCain for a birthday party, or George Bush going out and playing guitar with a country star, or George Bush flying over in his airplane looking down from above. Yeah, things seem a whole lot different when it was Katrina versus these fires in San Diego. Boy, Bush is right on that, you know, super fast in that situation, huh? All of a sudden we get all sorts of equipment down there, and the people down there seem to be taken care of just fine. Yeah, I just can't quite put my finger on what the difference might be there.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. George Bush doesn't care about black people. Thank you, Kanye West, for that enlightenment there. You know, it is a little bit of apples and oranges. Let's back up a second here on the whole Katrina versus the wildfires thing. It is a little bit of apples and oranges. When Katrina happened, we're talking about an entire city being flooded out, and that made it incredibly difficult to get the supplies and the supplies and the help to the people that were trapped there, because all the roads were washed out and all the communities nearby were also flooded out. So we had to bring, you know, supplies and help from so far away. Whereas when you're talking about the Los Angeles and the San Diego fires, you know, the roads don't burn down, right? So it's still possible to get people in and out. A second difference that we might take a look at is the fact that when we're looking at New Orleans, we're looking at a city and a population that is less auto dependent than what you would have here in San Diego, where everybody has a car. So there's a huge difference there. You know, the people in San Diego and in Southern California had more means, not only just economic means, but also just having the roads and the cars to be able to get out. You know, so there's a lot of differences there as far as as how we're looking at Katrina versus the California wildfires. So, to some extent, it might be unfair to blame George Bush or to blame the federal government, you know, for their lousy response to Katrina versus their what seems to be a pretty decent response in the California wildfires. But on the other hand, Katrina was predicted, right? I mean, they had some warning about Katrina coming. With the wildfires just start. They just happen, and there's not as much warning. Although, when the wildfires first started, like we mentioned, and like Senator Barbara Boxer pointed out, when they first started, there was enough warning that if we'd have had the air support, we could have taken care of those fires. We could have reined them in earlier. Well, we're going to keep talking about these California wildfires, and we're taking your calls as well if you have some opinions on the matter at 866-5577-377. Let's go to the phones right now. I've got Ed in Portland on the line. Ed, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, happy Saturday to you, sir.
Happy Saturday, happy Halloween.
You know, I think there was about 3 or 4 days ahead of time when people said with the Santa Ana winds coming up, there was a real potential for this stuff. And so the early warning, there was a bit of early warning for the fires in California, even ahead of the first spark. I mean, people said, hey, this is real possible.
Oh, yeah, the conditions. I mean, anybody with half a brain can see the conditions, you know, 150 days without rain and it being as dry as it was, certainly.
Yep. There was, you know, 2 weeks ago you had a caller from Vancouver, Washington on, and I really agreed with what he was saying. He said it's really important to realize that the Republicans are paying for this with a hot check. And that is that, you know, for the catastrophe capitalism and so on, we're just deferring payments. We're just borrowing against our kids in the future, running up these huge debts. So-called conservative spending. I mean, these guys are spending worse than drunken sailors.
Absolutely. I was just looking at some of the statistics the other day. You know, the Bush administration, even when you factor out the spending on the war, has had the largest increase in discretionary spending of any administration. Even the previous holder was record holder was LBJ in that respect, you know, with the Great Society and all that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, LBJ had kind of an unpopular Asian war to deal with at the time, too.
Yeah, ours, I guess, is outpaced that by far. Our Vietnam War is nothing compared to the war in Iraq now.
Oh,
and
no.
Don't you love it that they're going to also, that Bush is still interested in cutting the inheritance tax? I mean, it, you know, zeroing it out in 20 years. Oh, my gosh, that's $2 trillion taken out of the economy if we go for that nonsense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just ridiculous what they want to do, you know, give a tax break to Paris Hilton, because she's certainly hurting for the funds, you know. Thank you, Ed, so much for your call. I appreciate
it. Take
it easy. Yeah, this 6.5-year nightmare of these neoconservatives in charge, their whole goal, I mean, the whole goal of this has been to erase every progressive gain that has happened since the Franklin Roosevelt administration. Paul Krugman is the columnist for the New York Times, also a well-known economist, and he points out how the economic situation that we're living in right now today, with the gap between the rich and the poor and the economic disparity, is as great as it was in the Gilded Age. You know, back in the days of the robber barons, before Social Security, and right on the brink of the stock market collapse in 1929, we have got the same basic economic conditions now as we did then. But what's worse now is the fact that we've got so many of these corporations, these transnational corporations, entrenched into the political process that I'm having trouble seeing how we're going to cure this without getting money, seriously taking a look at the money in our political campaigns. This is supposed to be a country of we the people, not we the corporations. And we need to do something about that. I don't see leadership on either the Republican or the Democratic side to fix this. I mean, they know where their bread is buttered, apparently. Well, we've got to take a break for the news here at the bottom of the hour, but when we come back, we're going to move on. If you want to talk about the California wildfires, call back in about that at 866-5577-377. I'm going to tell you a little bit about White House censorship on global warming. We've also got a look at what's going on in Iraq and the war drums being beaten to get us into Iran. You remember this story from 5 years ago. If you got your tapes of the news conferences from 5 years ago, just rewind those and play them again. And every time they say Iraq, just say Iran, right? Because it's the same playbook. They're running the same playbook on us all over again. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show. Give us an email, radicalruss@gmail.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back, everyone. 33 after the hour here on Halloween weekend. Ah, yeah. My favorite holiday.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
there's going to be a lot of people out there doing the Monster Mash tonight. So everyone be very, very careful this weekend. There's going to be all sorts of ghouls and goblins, little kids running around in costumes, you know, Johnny Invisible pedestrian costume or whatever. So be real careful when you're driving around tonight. There's going to be lots of kids to watch for. Also, some of the adults out there are going to be out there partying, to go in their costume parties and such. And who knows how good a shape they'll be in when they're driving. So please, if you're going to be going out tonight, please designate a driver. Save a life, okay? Also, for those of you who are just tuning in, this is the 26th episode of the Russ Belville Show here on AM 620 KPOJ. And if you were listening last week, you may have heard that this was going to be the last episode of the Russ Belville Show. Well, kinda. It's the last episode at this time on this station. So that's all I can say at this point. I don't have any more details than that, but check out the website at RadicalRust.net. We'll have the latest updates up there, so if you want to continue to get your radical progressive fix in the weekend, you can tune in next week wherever I end up landing. Talk radio. What an interesting career. All sorts of uncertainty sometimes. But we were talking about the California wildfires, and if you want to get involved in the conversation here, the phone number is 866-5577-377. And we talked a little bit about how, you know, the California National Guard equipment, about half of it is still in Iraq. So they had all sorts of problems getting a handle on this fire at the very beginning when they really could have contained it because they didn't have enough air support. They didn't have enough air support because so many of the planes and so much of the equipment was back out there in Iraq. So once again, the neocon policies, the agenda of imperialism and domination of the Middle East is once again costing American lives here in the homeland. And it's just sad to see. It's sad to see this because so many people, I'm former National Guard myself, and so many people, when they join the National Guard, they're joining for two reasons. They're joining to pay for college, get the benefits, whatever it might be. And they're paying, and they're joining to serve their country and their state. You know, if someone wanted to be, you know, Army Reserve, they'd sign up for Army Reserve. But when they sign up for National Guard, it's really more of a state obligation. It's that well-regulated militia we talked about back in the Second Amendment. And you know, that's when I joined the National Guard, that's what I was thinking too, is that the likelihood of going to war wasn't that great. More likely we'd be filling sandbags at a flood or helping people if there was an earthquake or something like that. So for these poor California soldiers that are out there in Iraq, you know, and all their equipment's out there in Iraq, and they really just, my heart goes out to them, because I know so many of them must be, you know, as much danger as they're in Iraq, I know they're thinking about their loved ones back in California, you know, especially if, you know, if they got family down in San Diego, and there's so many military bases down in that area that I can't imagine that there's not some family of some of our soldiers down there in San Diego who are struggling, coming back to find that their homes are burned down. And this is another thing I wanted to bring up too, is sometimes, you know, the reaction that people have to this is often colored by their political leanings and other leanings. And I heard some people, I overheard people talking about this at work, you know, and I overheard some conversations. And some people's reaction to this was if, when they pointed out how all the people in San Diego were evacuating orderly, and then they were going to Qualcomm Stadium, the home of the San Diego Chargers, and they were behaving so well, and how there's massage therapists and all the food and water that they could need, and it was like a little picnic vacation, as compared to Katrina, you know, when we're talking about the Superdome down there, and they're saying, you know, those people, you know, and you know what they mean by those people, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Those people rioted and shot and had all these problems. Well, once again, it's apples and oranges. When Katrina happened down there, we're talking about a population with a much lower income, median income, than the people in San Diego. We're also talking about people that have more likely to own a car. We're also talking about a situation where the entire city was underwater and without power or sewer. Okay, so when the evacuees went to the Superdome in Louisiana after Katrina, the reason the rioting and all the the difficulties that happened down there had a lot to do with not having the food, the water, the sanitation, any sort of medical supplies, right? So to blame this on the victims, to blame this on the people, to say those people in Louisiana couldn't behave, but the people in San Diego could, has a lot to do with the circumstance they were put in. When the people were taken care of in San Diego, when the authorities in California had the plans already drawn up and all the evacuation routes taken care of, that makes a huge difference in how people are going to react to a situation. Now, we want to go to the phones here. The phone number again is 866-5577-377. And I've got Sharon in Tualatin, Oregon. Sharon, welcome back to the Russ Belville Show.
Happy Saturday, Russ.
Happy Saturday to you, Sharon.
I just went on your site and realized that you might get to still be somewhere broadcasting. And I love the better hours, the 11 to 2.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But that's still in general. We're not, it's not signed on the dotted line, but we're hoping.
Oh, good. Well, my family, I still have my mom and my daughter and my grandson, one of my grandkids down there in Orange County.
Mm.
And their homes have been safe, but the air quality is horrible. They're having, especially my 91-year-old mom's having a problem. But what we're not hearing up here amazes me. Because everybody down there is having problems because of the fire, from total tragedies to just the air quality. They're all up in arms about Bush and all of our equipment being gone, and all, it's the same stuff with him over and over. People are furious, but you know what? We haven't heard a word of it up here in Oregon.
Now, it is kind of quiet, isn't it? Yeah. So you're saying that, you know, hearing from your family down in Orange County that the media down there is just is up in arms about this. Is that true? Yeah. Is that?
Well, the people are too. I think Bush has either stifled the media down there or something, because we're not hearing up here what they're hearing down there and what they're saying to each other. These families that have been so tragically burned to the ground. I mean, you know, they're. It's always him.
Well, I don't like to give him more power than he has, but yeah, there's certainly a large contribution here. You know, when I was growing up and learning about America and what government was all about, I was always taught that, you know, part of the reason that we had a constitution was to provide for the general welfare. You know, to take care of the citizenry and to do the things that they can't handle on their own. And certainly, you know, having enough planes to be able to put out fires is something that we can that we should be depending on the government for, I would say.
Yeah, and this march to Iran is getting real scary.
Oh, yeah, no kidding about that. In fact, thank you for your call, Sharon. I've got to run to a break. But, yeah, coming back right after the break, we're going to talk about that as well. The drumbeat for the march to Iran. You know, we heard this story back in 2002. Like I said earlier in the show, just go get your transcripts from all the press conferences from, say, September to December of 2002, and run it through Microsoft Word, run the little search and replace, and just replace Iraq with Iran, and you're going to hear exactly what they're saying right now. We're hearing mushroom clouds, we're hearing nuclear capabilities, imminent threats. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Mo' money. Welcome back to the Russ Belville Show. President Bush wants mo' money. Yeah, this is just news that came out this week. You know, he just got done vetoing S-CHIP, right? He vetoes health insurance for poor kids. You know, when you read stuff like that, it's almost surreal. You know, it's almost like one of those snidely whiplash, you know, twist his mustache, put the girl on, tied up on a railroad track kind of villains, right? You can't believe that a human being with an ounce of decency could veto health care for sick, poor kids. But he did it. He did it because he said, well, you know, $35 billion over the span of 7 years. Gosh, that's way too much money. We can't be spending that kind of money. That's just awful. And it would lead people to socialized health care. Oh, no, the socialized health care. Yeah, 1 week after that, after vetoing that, he turns around and asks Congress for another $46 billion to fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yeah, we don't have $35 billion to take care of poor kids. We don't have that. But we do have $46 billion, apparently, to bomb some poor kids. Yeah, apparently we've got that kind of money laying around. Yeah, originally Bush went and asked for $141 billion, $141 billion in an emergency supplemental. Right? Now, these are always emergency supplementals. Like, oh, gosh. We're still in a war? Oh, gee, we better get some money for it. It's like, come on, put the war funding in the direct budget, first of all. But aside from that, $141 billion was enough. Wants another $46 billion for a new total request of $189 billion. $189 billion. Now, that's we're talking some real money there, aren't we? The cost for the war so far, we're talking about half a trillion dollars, $500 billion that we've spent on this war so far. And let's just set the Wayback Machine here for a second. Right, let's trip back to 2003 when they were telling us that we would go into Iraq and it would last, 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months. The economic advisor at the time, Lawrence Lindsay, estimated that the cost of the war might exceed $200 billion back in 2003. So, of course, he was fired for the bad news, because that's the way it works in the Bush administration, is if you give any bad news, you're fired, right? You can't tell the truth. Ask General Shinseki. Ask any number of people that have been fired from this administration, Paul O'Neill and all these people who've stood up against the Bush administration. They know the story. He was fired, and then this new director, the Office of Management and Budget, came in, Mitch Daniels, and said, that estimate's too high. $200 billion, that's crazy. A reasonable figure would be, 50 to 60 billion. Yeah, a reasonable figure would be 50 to 60 billion. Now we're up to half a trillion. And yet, even that isn't the true extent of the cost, because you got to figure, like one of my callers said earlier, Ed said earlier, this is being funded on hot checks. This is being funded on credit. Your grandchildren, your unborn grandchildren, are paying for this war right now, to the tune of about $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States today. Your bill for the Iraq war is about $8,000 right now. Because if you start to add in the interest that's going to, that we're going to have to accumulate and pay off in this Iraq war, we're talking about $2.4 trillion, $705 billion of that being the interest payments. And of course, President Bush now, is going to try to use the bully pulpit here to paint anyone who would disagree with giving him another blank check. He wants to paint those people as anti-American.
You know, I often hear that war critics oppose my decisions, but still support the troops. Well, I'll take them at their word. And this is a chance for them to show it, that they support the troops.
Right. So if you don't give President Bush another $189 billion, no questions asked, then you don't support the troops. You hate the troops because you just won't give him anything he wants. I am certainly hoping at this point that maybe, possibly, perhaps the Democratic leadership can muster up enough cojones grande here to be able to stop this madness. Use the power of the purse. It's long past time. Why are we compromising with someone who refuses to compromise? These people are off their rocker. They are guano loco. They have left the reservation. There's no point in compromising anymore. They are not playing by the same rules that we have played under for the past 200 and some odd years in this country. These are criminals in charge of our country, and it's time we start treating them as such. 51 after the hour.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
All right, welcome back to the short segment here. I'm Radical Russ, broadcasting from the free speech zone we call America, up here in the upper left corner, in a beautiful, beautiful place known as the Rose City, Stumptown, Portland, Oregon. Hey, we were just mentioning how President Bush here wants another $46 billion to help fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And you know, it's about time that the Congress that we elected to end this war finally gets the message and ends this war. You know, they keep trying to negotiate with this president. They keep trying to come up with bills with timetables and come up with ways of trying to get this president to turn this this war footing around. And it's just not going to happen. He's not going to budge. We're not talking about a regular sane individual with a conscience, okay? It's time for some tough measures, and some of those measures are going to require getting tough with the purse strings here. I was listening to talk radio this week, like I normally do, and I was listening to Eddie on the Ed Schultz show, who, of course, I consider Ed Schultz to be one of the finest judges of talk radio talent on the planet. anyway, but talking, he was interviewing Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, and Reid would not commit to being able to just cut the purse strings. Eddie kept asking him, you know, why don't you just cut off the funding for the war? You know, you could do that. And Reid said, well, we got to do the right thing. It's important that we do the right thing. We want to make sure we do the right thing. Since when is ending the war not the right thing? You know, these Democrats are just afraid. You know, it's time to stop being afraid for once. Yes, it's time to stop being afraid. And it's time to really stand up for the American people and what the people want. You know, everyone wants out of this war. We've got support up to 65, 75% here of people saying it's time to redeploy our troops. It's time to get them out of Iraq. They won the war. You know, remember Mission Accomplished some 4 or 5 years ago? Remember that? Yeah, they won the war. Their task was to go in, take down the Iraqi army, and depose the government of Saddam Hussein, and they did it. And they did it valiantly, and they did it bravely. Now, that war is over, and now they've botched this occupation. It's not what we signed up for. It's not what we were told we were getting into. We were lied into this situation, and so now it's time for the Democrats to stand up for what the people want. The right thing, Senator Reid, is to cut the funding for the war. The right thing is to realize that the American people have your back. And if the Republicans try to come out with some attack ad, oh, the Democrats don't love the troops, they hate the troops because they cut the funding, we've got your back. We're not going to be fooled by it this time. We know who cares about the troops. We've seen the scandals at Walter Reed. We've seen what's happened to our soldiers having their deployments extended to 15 months and losing their 12 months of time in between. We've seen going to the war with the army you have, not the army you wish you had. We've seen our soldiers having to scrounge through ammo dumps trying to find armor to care for themselves. We know the Republicans are not to support the troops party. So Democrats, get on the ball, cut the funding for this war. It's time. It's time to get out of Iraq. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show. Thanks for listening. We're coming back right after the news break here with some more topics at the top of the hour and taking your calls at 866-5577-377. If you'd like updates on the future of the Russ Belville Show, send me an email, radicalruss@gmail.com, or check out the website, www.radicalruss.net.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good morning and welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Halloween weekend. I'm Radical Russ, your red state refugee, and this is the Russ Belville Show, coming at you from the free speech zone we call America, with political talk for the regular guys out there, and regular gals too. People like me who work a full-time job for a living. People who are just trying to survive in George Bush's America. And speaking of just trying to survive, if I've got any listeners out there that are in the Poughkeepsie, New York area, be careful, because the story is coming out today that for the weekend, Vice President Dick Cheney has decided he's going to go hunting again. So we want to warn all lawyers in the Poughkeepsie, New York area to be on the lookout for a grumpy old man in orange with a shotgun. So be careful out there. Yes, be careful out there. We don't want anyone else to get shot in the face. Also, at this time, we're taking your calls at 866-5577-377, and I want to get to the line right here. I've got a gentleman who's been holding on for quite a while now. Carl in Brownsville, Oregon, wants to give us a call. So, Carl, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
How are you doing?
Well, so far, so good. What's up, Carl?
I wanted to just give you a suggestion, or give whoever's listening a suggestion, on how the Congress can support the troops, piss off George Bush, and cut the funding all at the same time.
Oh, I'm all for that. Let's do it.
Okay. So it's been recently reported, and I can't independently verify this, but it's been widely reported that there are now currently more contractors in Iraq than American troops. Contractors are not American troops. They're separate. They're outside. So and it's widely known that the contractors are paid substantially more than our troops, whether they be regular Army or National Guard. So, if Congress can figure out how to fund the regular American troops, fund that money, and cut all the money that would go to the contractors. Why don't they do that?
I see. That's a really good idea. Set yourself up, Carl, so that we fund the troops, and we can be strong on that and say, hey, troops got all the money they need. Blackwater, on the other hand, maybe we'll take some of that Blackwater money away. I think that's a great idea, Carl, and thanks for your call on that. I appreciate your call. Yeah, absolutely. We need to do something, and one of the things that we can do as American citizens, of course, is to call our Congress. And, you know, I say this every week, and sometimes I get cynical people. They'll email me, and they'll say, call your Congress. Can't you suggest anything stronger than that? Well, yeah, sure. March in a protest. Go to their office and speak to them in public. Write letters to the editor. I mean, make your voice heard. That's part of what we're doing here. But the number one thing, I think, is to let your legislators know where you stand and let them know that their job depends on getting us out of Iraq. I mean, I think we made it pretty clear in 2006 when we voted them in, and we need to make it even clearer as we come up to the 2008 election. Get us out of Iraq. So, if you got your cell phone on you, program this in. This ought to be on your speed dial. The phone number for Congress is 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. That'll get you through to the congressional switchboard, and they'll just ask for your zip code, and you tell them your zip code, they'll forward you to the right office for your senator or for your representative. Call them every week. I know people don't think that this makes any difference, but it makes a huge difference. Every call they get, they realize that it takes your time. It takes time and energy to call. And so when they get a call, they treat that like it's between 20 and 50 people's opinions, because they know that there's so few people that actually take the time to call. I mean, you look at the groups and the issues in America that seem to be sacrosanct. You know, they seem to be the third rail that you can never touch, like Social Security or gun control or abortion rights. And why are those so difficult for the politicians to touch? Because the people that believe in those issues call. They always call. They always write. And the politicians know that a lot of votes depend on how they stand on those issues. The war needs to be exactly that as well. And not just for the Republicans out there that are running, but for some of those Democrats, too. You know, I think a lot of us got our hopes up in 2006 when we got a Democratic majority in the House and the Senate. But when you really look at the makeup of the Democratic majority, it's not all that Democratic, if you ask me. You know, not what I would traditionally call Democratic. We've got a lot of what they call blue dog Democrats out there, really conservative types of Democrats. A lot of them are in office just because there was such, you know, everybody was so fed up with the Republicans back in 06 that the only other choice was to vote for a Democrat. But these Democrats in some of these areas, aren't that liberal. They're not that progressive. They're very, very conservative Democrats. So, you know, I deride Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid a lot for, you know, their leadership and what's happening when we have this majority. But sometimes, you know, I'll admit, sometimes I'm a little unfair with that because they got a tough row to hoe right now. One of the advantages you have of being a Republican is Republicans are pretty lockstep type of people. They believe in authoritarianism and taking orders and everybody sticking to the same script and the same talking points. So when the Republicans have a majority, it's a lot easier for them to exert their will because they all are a pack. They're like a pack of dogs. They all follow the alpha dog. Whereas Democrats are more like cats. Yeah, Democrats are more like cats, and it's like herding cats, and there's so many different types of Democrats. There's the progressive Democrats, the progressive caucus. There's the blue dog Democrats that are more conservative, and all these disparate types of Democratic agendas end up competing so that we have trouble, maintaining a consistent majority. I mean, Just a couple examples. There was recently, the Senate just confirmed this Leslie Southwick, and I don't know if you caught this story. This was an appeals court nominee, a Bush appeals court nominee, that was just confirmed to the Senate by a 59-38 vote, which means that Harry Reid was unable to get even 40 people together to filibuster this guy. Now, why is this guy such a concern? Well, first of all, he's a conservative judge, which duh, he was nominated by Bush. Of course, he's going to be conservative, and there's nothing wrong with that per se. I mean, presidents, you know, elections have consequences, and presidents have the right to nominate judges who follow their same basic philosophy. Got no problem with that. What I got a problem with this guy is some of his record on some of his judgments in the past indicate that this guy, you know, he's not too subtle in his racism, in his homophobia, and his hatred of the working class. I got three examples. Let me give you three examples of this Leslie Southwick. Well, first of all, he was opposed by the Congressional Black Caucus and the NAACP. Okay, so that right off the bat, these historical civil rights organizations and Congressional Black Congress have pointed out this guy's kind of a problem. Here's the issue. We go back to 1998, and Southwick was the judge who ruled in favor of a white employee who liked to refer to her African-American coworker as a, quote, good old Tigger. Well, I'm not going to say N-word. I don't say N-word. It makes me sound like a 12-year-old. A good old Tigger, right? Of course, but didn't say Tigger. You know what they said, right? So this white employee refers to her African-American co-worker as a good old Tigger. And Southwick said, oh, that's not a problem. That's not any sort of racial discrimination. She shouldn't have been fired from the state social services agency because the slur was, quote, not motivated out of racial hatred or racial animosity directed toward a particular coworker or towards blacks in general, end quote. Yeah, Southwick's point here was just referring to an African-American coworker as a good old Tigger, that's just an idiom. That's just a friendly saying. He didn't mean anything hateful by it. You know, that word, that particular word, you can't say it without it being taken hatefully. That's the nature of that word. That's why we have such a problem with that word. It's hateful in itself. And the Mississippi Supreme Court agrees. The Mississippi Supreme Court later overturned Southwick's decision. Another Southwick decision. In 2001, Judge Southwick ruled that a little girl should be taken away from her mother and given to her father because her mother lived with a woman in a lesbian home. Now, I knew there was lesbian women. I didn't know houses could be lesbian. Did you know that? Anyway, so yes, this mother was in a lesbian relationship, and in his decision, Southwick stated that choosing to be gay has consequences, and that courts should consider, quote, the homosexual lifestyle, end quote, when deciding custody cases. Right, because, you know, gay people are such bad parents. It's so bad for the children to have gay people raising them. Despite the fact every time you hear one of these stories about kids being locked up in you know, inches of filth and feces and garbage, you know, chained in the basement, being abused, being sexually abused, all these abuse cases that you hear all the time, it's always some straight couple that is perpetrating the abuse. Very rarely do you hear any problems with homosexual couples raising kids. And all the science that's been studied on this shows that kids have absolutely no detrimental effects from being raised by homosexuals. And yet, this Southwick still thinks it's a choice and still thinks that the courts should consider whether someone's gay in deciding custody cases. So, not only that, third point. Last point here. Southwick ruled in 1999 that a woman who became sick from working for a dangerous chemical company could not seek compensation because she waited too long. This woman was told in 1993 that all of her symptoms, her headaches, her burning sensations, her seizures, were caused by the chemicals she handled at work. This was in 93. And she filed within 1995, right? Now, there's a statute of limitations. You have to file within 3 years. So she's got a doctor telling her that, okay, the chemicals at work are causing your problems. This is in 93. In 95, she files suit. So she's well within the statute of limitations for this suit to go forward. And yet Southwick threw the case out. He threw the case out because this woman started having symptoms in 1983. And he says, well, that's 12 years ago. That's way before the three-year statute of limitations, despite the fact that the woman didn't even know what the causes were until 1993 when her doctor figured it out. So they can't even raise a filibuster to stop this guy? Man, we got to do something about this. 18 after.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Hi, welcome back to Halloween weekend. It's 22 after the hour.
The lunatic is on the grass.
And now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the evangenital American Taliban. And the cable news punditocracy. The Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award. Yes, this is our new segment for an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. And you know, the tough part of this segment is just narrowing it down. That is the hard part. So, this week we've narrowed it down to a grudge match from the two heavyweight champions, the Tweedledee and Tweedledummer of cable news pinheads, Fox News' Bill Falafeloofel O'Reilly, and CNN's Glenn Beck. They went on it this past week with just spewing forth a venerable stream of idiotic statements. Let's get to them. First of all, in the news this week, we learned that author J.K. Rowling, who authored all the Harry Potter books, came out in an interview here and mentioned that the wizard Dumbledore, you know, the head of the school for the wizards or whatever, I don't read the book, so I don't know, but the head of the school for wizards, the character, is gay, is a gay man, all right? And so this, of course, had the right wing just freaking out. We can't have our kids reading about gay wizards. And this was Bill O'Reilly on the persistent peril of gay wizards.
Although those wizards, I'm very, very suspicious about what they're doing in their spare time.
Well, they are
magic. So I think,
you know,
this is my conclusion, is that J.K. Rowling is a provocateur, did it on purpose, and now is just going to let all hell break loose.
Oh no, all hell's going to break loose. The kids are reading about gay wizards. Oh my, what could happen? But not to be outdone, following President-elect Gore's winning of the Nobel Prize for his work on global warming, Glenn Beck counters by exposing the fraud perpetrated by all the leading scientists in the world.
The Arctic is experiencing faster melting. If this were to go, sea level worldwide would go up 20 feet.
I mean, come on. Shanghai's underwater.
Oh, no. Who's going to make those little umbrellas for those tropical drinks?
Yeah, so yeah, that's the big issue with global warming, is umbrellas for tropical drinks. Thanks, Glenn Beck, but we're not to be outdone. Not to be outdone. Bill O'Reilly fires back with the tried and true tactic of claiming that the liberals hate America by trashing their teachers.
It seems to me, and the studies indicate, that most teachers, high school and college in the United States, are left-wingers, that they bring in a anti-American viewpoint to the sense that they don't preach about the nobility of America.
Yeah, so our teachers are left-wingers who don't preach about the nobility of America, so they hate America for pointing out things like, you know, how we committed genocide to take over this continent and how we practiced slavery. You know, just teaching the facts of our history is hating America somehow. But we gotta end it up here with another one from Glenn Beck, hitting back, you know, counterpunching. Glenn Beck is gonna take that same tactic, you know, trashing the left wing, trashing people as being liberals who hate America. But he really, really takes the cake with this one.
I think there is a handful of people who hate America. Unfortunately for them, a lot of them are losing their homes in a forest fire today.
Glenn Beck, for demonstrating the lack of tact worthy of George Bush and the black heart of Dick Cheney, you are the winner of this week's Lunatic Fringe Award. Man, you can't believe some of the things these people say. And got a bonus one for you. You know, I wanted to do the thing here with Beck and O'Reilly just to point out the stupid stuff they've been saying on their shows. But Fred Thompson was definitely somebody who was competing to get into the bit this week, because this was Fred Thompson campaigning out there on the campaign trail. You know, when he was awake long enough to campaign. And he was in South Carolina, and someone was asking him about the insurgency in Iraq and how things are going in Iraq, and you know how our troops are going to fight against this deadly insurgency that's taken so many lives. And this is what Fred Thompson thinks of the Iraqi insurgency.
We will all be a safer country. We will not be a safer America if the whole world watches us be defeated by a bunch of kids with improvised explosive devices.
A bunch of kids with improvised explosive devices. Yeah, that's why we're spending, you know, the trillions in Iraq, and we've had, you know, over 3,800 troops killed, is because we can't defeat a bunch of kids with IEDs. That's how you're going to characterize our enemy, as just a bunch of kids with IEDs? What does that say about your respect for the soldiers that are fighting them? That somehow we're bogged down by a bunch of kids with IEDs? That's just reprehensible. I can't believe you said something like that. Well, when we come back around from the news break at the bottom of the hour, we're going to move on to some other issues here. We're going to look at that Judge Mukasey, who's been nominated for Attorney General. He just can't come to call waterboarding torture. And we'll take a look at what John McCain has to say about that as well. 28 after the hour.
I know some in Congress are against the war and are seeking ways to demonstrate that opposition. I recognize their position, and they should make their views heard.
Yeah, I just won't do anything about it. 33 after the hour, I'm Radical Russ. Welcome back to the show. Yeah, they're asking for more money for Iraq. And you know, a lot of this money, this taxpayer money that's going to Iraq, is going to contractors. I had a caller talk about this earlier on in the show, but you know, this whole contractor situation, some estimates are saying up to 40 cents of every taxpayer dollar that goes to Iraq is going to some contracting company. Blackwater, Khaki, Triple Canopy, lots of them. There's a lot of them out there. And this taxpayer money that we're spending is there's just no oversight going on here. I mean, we've already heard the stories out of Iraq where $9 billion in cash just went missing, where there was $282 million in cash that was robbed from an Iraqi bank, you know, just cash just walking away. And another recent development, this came out just as we hit the end of the week, is how Prime Minister al-Maliki out there in Iraq is signing orders that say that the Iraqi parliament can't investigate corruption against al-Maliki or his top deputies. You know, so he's taking a page out of the Bush playbook here. You know, just close your eyes, nothing to see here, move along, no corruption here. When, of course, the government of Iraq is as corrupt as it gets. You know, it's the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in that sense. Anyway, with regards to these contracts that are going out here, just a couple things I thought you ought to know. First of all, going back to Blackwater, you know, we're talking about the mercenary group that back on September 16th there was a public killing, right? They killed all these Iraqi civilians, unarmed Iraqi civilians. They weren't being fired on. Numerous eyewitnesses that say these Blackwater guys opened fire first, and this has been a serious problem. The government of Iraq is saying they want to have all the contracts with Blackwater terminated, and have Blackwater removed from the country. And then they had a session with the State Department, a secret session, and then they came back and said, oh no, that's okay, they can stay. You know, got to wonder what state was telling them as far as keeping them there. But yeah, apparently the sovereignty of the Iraqi government isn't enough to get these guys kicked out. But here's the scary part about this. It just came out, according to some internal State Department emails that were leaked to ABC News, State Department officials knew about Blackwater killing innocent civilians more than 2 years ago. There's 2 years ago that they knew that Blackwater mercs were running wild out in that country, giving a bad name to the United States of America. Because, you know, to the Iraqi civilians, an American in body armor and camouflage toting an automatic weapon, they don't know if it's a contractor or a soldier. As far as they're concerned, that's just the USA. That's America. That represents America. So these guys are running loose, running wild in the country, just shooting up civilians. And they knew about this 2 years years ago, and didn't do anything about it. Not until it became public this year is Condoleezza Rice doing anything about it. And you know, when Condoleezza Rice is involved in a situation, you know there's going to be some kind of sleazy lies coming out of her mouth. And just to show you how little they care and how little they think we're watching, that they know they can get away with this stuff, and they know that we're not holding them accountable because somebody took impeachment off the table. Condoleezza Rice promoted two senior staffers who had oversight over Blackwater. Justine Sienkiewicz, who oversaw all the State Department security contracts, and her predecessor, Kevin Berry. So two people who knew about, in 2005, knew that Blackwater was killing innocent Iraqi civilians, these guys get promoted. Heck of a job. Heck of a job, Sienkiewicz. Heck of a job, Barry. Gosh, they're just a couple more tragedies away from winning the Congressional Medal of Freedom at this point. And more on these contractor bad guys. One of the reasons we have a military that we assign all these tasks to is because the military is under civilian control in this country. You know, that ultimately the president and then the president answers to the people. We're in control of the military. And that's why we have military cooks and military bands and military truck drivers, so that we have the Uniform Code of Military Justice and we have accountability. We have a chain of command where people are held accountable for their actions. But now we turned all of these military duties, these former military duties, over to these private contractor companies who in Iraq don't fall under Iraqi law because Paul Bremer made them immune after he left, or right before he left, and they don't really fall under American law because they're not under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They're literally in a lawless zone. Well, of all these contracting companies, I just wanted to point out this one. This kind of floated under the radar here this week. There's a company out there called DHB Industries. Now, DHB Industries makes body armor for our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And this company is under investigation by the Justice Department for whether they made body armor with substandard materials. Yeah, cutting corners on our soldiers, cutting corners on the body armor that would protect your kids in wartime. Approximately 23,000 vests had to be removed from the field in 2005 after they were discovered to have critical, life-threatening flaws. Yeah, so much for the body armor. Thanks. So this company, DHB Industries, is under investigation by the feds. Now, their head, their CEO, their ultra-uber-rich CBO, David Brooks, was arrested yesterday for stealing money from the company to supplement his lavish lifestyle, according to Reuters and ABC News. So it's not enough that they're cutting corners on 23,000 vests in order to make a bigger buck for the company. But then the company, fat with all this taxpayer contract money, the CEO of that company is stealing money from the company, is embezzling from the company, embezzling our money to fund his lavish lifestyle. Now, lavish. What do we mean by lavish? How lavish a lifestyle are we talking about? Okay, first of all, check this out. The guy had his company spend $10 million on a bat mitzvah for his daughter featuring performances by Aerosmith and Tom Petty. Now, I'm all for a nice birthday party for a 13-year-old Jewish girl. I think that's great. $10 million? $10 million and Aerosmith and Tom Petty of taxpayer money eventually that got funneled through this company through the contracts, and this guy stole? This guy spent $227,000 on a private jet, $200,000 on a Bentley, got a facelift for his wife, all on the company dime. So, of course, he's being investigated for that sort of embezzlement here, being accused of the embezzlement. But on top of that, now he's also being charged with insider trading. Because as soon as he heard about this federal investigation about the substandard body armor, as soon as he heard that, he went and sold off the shares of his stock, you know, before it would, you know, before that news would hit the public and cause the stock price to go down. And this guy made $186 million on that sale of stock through his insider trading. So if convicted, this guy is facing 25 years for securities mail fraud, insider trading, and conspiracy, another 25 years for insider trading, 20 years for obstruction of justice, and 5 years for tax fraud. You know, good. Lock him up. I want to see this guy perp walked. You know, we see these shows on TV all the time, like Cops, where they're busting some guy in a trailer park with a wife beater shirt on, and we see that all the time. How come we don't have a TV show for the white collar criminals, right? I want to see cops in Wall Street, you know, cops on Silicon Valley, whatever, where we take a few of these multimillionaire CEOs who are raping and pillaging our country, who are shipping our jobs overseas, and who are destroying the unions in this country. I want to see these guys frog marched and do the perp walk, right? I want to see these guys treated like the guys are treated on a cop show. Because I'll tell you what, some drunk redneck in a trailer park is a whole lot less concern to me than some CEO who's cutting corners on 23,000 vests and stealing taxpayer money through embezzlement. Let's get these white-collar crooks on the TV sometime. I'm Radical Ressin. I gotta go to my happy place. I'll be back in just a minute. It's 42 after. All right, 46 after, and welcome to Halloween weekend. I'm going to remind you all to be very careful tonight. We might have little ghosties and goblins running around, little kids, trying to get their treats. So be careful driving around tonight. Watch for those kids, especially in the residential neighborhoods. And of course, adults out there, if you're going out to some sort of Halloween party, make sure to have yourself a designated driver or take a cab, take a bus, take a train, something like that. No need for us to have any more tragedies on this holiday weekend. Now, I want to get back to talking just a little bit here about this attorney general nominee that's being grilled by the Senate. This Judge Michael Mukasey is the attorney general nominee, and it's a statement to how far we've slid, how far down the rabbit hole we've gone, that this guy's even being considered for attorney general. I mean, Alberto Gonzalez was so bad, such a bad attorney general, that it seemed at first when they were talking about this guy that they just wanted to know that he'd be independent of the White House. Would you be independent of the White House? Would you, politicize your department? Because, you know, with all the issues that went on with Gonzalez and the U.S. attorneys and all that. So they got around to asking this Mukasey guy what his opinion was on waterboarding, right? Because they're trying to nail down, you know, will this Justice Department stand up against the administration's use of torture? And the fact that as Americans we're even discussing this just blows my mind. The fact that we're having to decide whether or not we're the country that tortures and trying to figure out just exactly what little words we can tweak to decide whether or not it's really torture. This is Judge Mukasey hemming and hawing and trying to avoid the subject as to whether waterboarding is torture.
Do you have an opinion on whether waterboarding, which is the practice of putting somebody in a reclining position, strapping them down, putting cloth over their faces, and pouring water over the cloth to simulate the feeling of drowning, is that constitutional?
If it amounts to torture, it is not constitutional.
He just told you what it is. It's simulating drowning. It's putting the fear of death into someone's head. You know, John McCain said this isn't unlike, you know, putting a gun to someone's head with a blank in it and firing the blank. It's torture. It's psychological torture, not to mention the physical distress of being, you know, of simulating a drowning. This is a heinous, heinous, terrible, terrible act that's being perpetrated in our names, you and me, as Americans. The people of the world are knowing us as the torturers. Now, of course, Rudy Giuliani can't be bothered with this because Rudy Giuliani thinks it's just a little silly. I have a quote here from Giuliani running. He was in Iowa, and they asked him about Mukasey, you know, not calling waterboarding torture. And this is what his quote was. He says, "And I see when the Democrats are talking about torture,
September 11th,
they're not just talking about even this definition of waterboarding,
September 11th,
which, again, if you look at the liberal media and you look at the way they describe it, you could say it was torture and you shouldn't do it,
September 11th.
But they talk about sleep deprivation. I mean, on that theory, I'm getting tortured running for president of the United States,
September 11th.
That's just plain silly." But, Rudy, do you realize that sleep deprivation is a form of torture? According to the U.S. Army's own field manual on interrogation, abnormal sleep deprivation is a form of mental torture. The European Court of Human Rights and the Supreme Court of Israel have ruled that sleep deprivation is inhumane and unlawful. And even John Yoo, that attorney, who was the prime author of the torture memos that gave, you know, the administration the green light to start torturing people, conceded that sustained sleep deprivation can amount to a violation of the Geneva Conventions. It's pretty clear cut. Waterboarding is torture. And if we've got an attorney general nominee who can't see that, then he shouldn't be the attorney general. I'm Radical Russ. 50 after the hour. We'll be right back after these short messages.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
53 after the hour. Welcome back. We're in the short segment now.
Guess what?
What?
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more Belville.
Yes, more Belville.
I gotta have more Belville.
We've all gotta have more Belville.
Gotta have more Belville.
I agree. We gotta have more Belville. So if you've been listening to the Russ Belville Show and enjoying the show, this is my 26th episode, and this may indeed just be the last episode at this time slot on this radio station. So I don't think it's the end, though. I think I'm just the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. There's some great things on the horizon for the Russ Belville Show, and I'd like to take you with me. So if you want to keep up on what's happening with the Russ Belville Show, check out the website at www.radicalrust.net or send me an email at radicalrust@gmail.com. And I just want to thank everyone who's been involved in helping me out with this. No, seriously. I want to thank everyone that's helped me out with this adventure in my life. You know, I'm just a regular working guy. I teach computer software for a living. I do a little bit of computer consultations. And a year ago, I got involved in this contest from the Center for American Progress. And well, long story short, of course, is I won the contest. So I want to thank everyone who was involved with that contest. I want to thank Theo LeCompte out at the Center for American Progress and the people, all the people at the Center for American Progress. Also the people out at the Bill Press Show who were very, very helpful in getting this contest off the ground. Bill Press and Peter Ogburn out there in Washington, D.C., who did just great work and bore with me? Not how sure. Anyway, who stuck by me while I was learning the craft here. This is the most exciting job I've ever had. I just love this. It's so fun talking to you every week, even as frustrating as it gets detailing the crimes of the Bush maladministration. And I also want to thank my wife, my lovely wife, who insisted, and I use that in the most strict way, insisted that I get into that contest. I didn't have any idea about the contest. I just thought it was kind of a silly thing, and I wouldn't, you know, do very well in it or whatever. And, well, she was right, and I was wrong, and I know how much she loves to hear that. So, honey, you were absolutely right. You were absolutely right about the contest. So, thank you so much for having me get involved in it. I also want to thank the folks at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station, who've been so helpful. Josh back there working, our engineer, who's been coming in every Saturday to get me hooked up with the people in Washington, D.C. That's been invaluable, so thanks a lot, Josh. And also Mike Dirks, the operations manager here at KPOJ, who's been wonderful in helping us out with getting the studio and getting all hooked up and all the details that go into putting together a talk radio show. You know, it's been really eye-opening, and it's been a lot of fun to learn this. And last, but of course not least, to you listeners out there who've been very, very accommodating with your new talk show host. You know, I've had some great calls from folks, you know, Sharon in Tualatin and Chuck in Beaverton and Mike in Vancouver and probably far more names than I can remember. You've all just been great as far as helping out the Russ Belville Show. And it's been great hearing from some of you in email, too. I've gotten a lot of emails from people as well. And some of them I've answered kind of rudely. So if I have offended anyone in some of my emails, I apologize right up in advance. But again, this show is not ending. It's just evolving. So check out www.radicalrust.net, and you can get the latest information as far as where to tune in and when to tune in to continue to catch the evolution of a radical progressive talk show host. who likes rock and roll, as you can tell. So it's been a lot of fun, and love y'all. So, again, give us a call next time. You know, check out the website, like I said, or if you want to send me an email, the email address is radicalrus@gmail.com. And like I said, I'll just keep on doing what I've been doing and standing up for the average working folks out there who just want to have a voice in the political debate. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. It's been great. Take it easy, America.